Hello, people of the internet. How's it going today? How you doing? I'm Billy Bones, and this is A Walk Through the Mind, a moment where we can sit down, hang out, chit-chat, discuss a handful of ideas that have been bouncing around inside my head, see if we can't take those ideas for ourselves and go out and get the conversation started with friends, family, the people we meet on the street, or maybe we just get those gears turning within our own heads and see where it takes us. So I finished a book a little while ago called The Fabric of Civilization, How Textiles Made the World by Virginia Postrel. And for things that we use, I believe all of us use fabrics. Not many of us are running around in fig leaves anymore. But for fabrics, there's so much that I had no idea about. So many little things that kind of all built together. And through the whole story of things, there are little flashbacks of stories that I read. I have no idea what they were. You know, those good old high school or middle school days reading books that you didn't care about, but you had to read. But these things, these textiles that we use all throughout our lifetime, little fun facts that come through, making you question what everything's kind of worth, how it all breaks down piece by piece to kind of all come together, where we have these t-shirts, little $10, $15 t-shirts on the cheap end, or for whatever reason, we decide to spend some exorbitant amount on a button-up shirt or whatnot where it's $100, and how it's all made, where the price of everything again comes in, how colors were figured out and applied, because you can't just dunk certain things into certain things and get colors. You have to go through a process. Like the original color purple was obtained through the glands of certain snails out in the Mediterranean. And you had to crack the shells open on the snails and extract the whatever came from the gland and let it soak and boil in this pot of water for a couple of days. And then you could finally dunk your cloth into it and get a purple. But a very stinky and smelly process requiring so many snails on just the small little college experiment that was cited in the book. No one knows exactly for sure, but there's definitely good estimates on how many snails were required just for a single toga. But more importantly was how long things take when we look at just our shirts, maybe our sheets or our pants. We see all the individual threads that are woven throughout there. And I'm sure there's been a handful of us that have seen simple enough machines that kind of tack everything down, interweave all of the threads, and then mash them down. All of that being used to be done by hand to create the things like the sails on the ships that would go around the world. Weaving machines didn't always exist. Done a terrible job taking notes, obviously. I don't remember the name of the machine. But one little fact cited within the book was Viking ships would take about a year to build, whereas their sails could take upwards of 3 years to build due to how intricate everything was, just getting all those threads together. And that's not even talking about how long each of those threads needs to be to create such a thing. I believe one pair of jeans is 5 miles of thread, just a solo string if you were to untwine it all and if it were to be all just one consistent thread. That's a lot of material. And then your blue jeans. Blue is just not done. Cotton is not a very acceptable medium for taking color. It takes a very special series of events to make it absorb the color. And one little fact that again stuck with me was it takes 5 pounds of water to color 1 pound of cotton. And then it's expressed and thrown away, dealt with later. Sure, there's a cleaning process to it, but how much energy it takes just to create the color into that thing. These $5, $10, $15 shirts that we so aptly enjoy. Again, maybe a $50 sweatshirt, $100 jacket, more in the long lines of wool or thread. Leather is a different animal altogether, quite literally. Polyester, a little bit different as well. But the weaving looms, I guess is what they're called. All of the designs that are in there, very specific. Ones and zeros kind of a situation, except evens and odds and how it's all laid out. Very mathematical when it all breaks down to things that almost represent pixels in the way that the threads are intertwining and interacting with each other. When we look at things like silk, silk is now something that's been synthesized and we can make it as long as we want. But silk used to come specifically only from the cocoon of a specific caterpillar. Caterpillar would end up dying when they would take the silk cocoon and unwind it to create the threads. Very limited amount of silk available. Only so much that could be harvested from a natural resource that took time to grow. And rather laborious, again, to unwind those single strands, not break them, keep them in line, then connect them all together to create one's longer thread. How much is that worth in the grand scheme of things? It definitely increased the cost of silk. Again, supply and demand. Supply is low, demand being higher. And the request to make it, got to be able to pay your employees. I think about the looms, going back to that. That's the one that brought back the thought of the book. And when we go from individual weaving by seamstresses back in the day, clothiers, making all of the bolts of cloth all by hand, taking forever, paid menial amounts of money. And then the Industrial Revolution happened, and people were making bolts of cloth day in and day out, day and night. So much so that we were employing kids at that point in time. As I cite the book, I can't recall. Talking about how dangerous it was where things were moving so fast during this steam-powered revolution, I guess, where if you didn't get your hands in the right spot at the right time, losing a finger was a good deal. You could totally lose a whole limb, and if you're not careful, your life, due to fewer work restrictions, fewer social protections, I guess. If you were injured on the job, you were injured on the job, and tough luck, kick you out on the street. But all this cloth, more or less, at least the way we look at it now, costs nothing. All of the prices all kind of get mixed into the wash. How much does it cost to create 100 feet of thread? How far does 100 feet of thread get you? Not even a quarter of a shirt. Maybe if you're like an infant. But then where does everything else kind of build in with this fantastic book making me look at the differences? Because again, we didn't look at just wool and cotton and how the processes of breaking those down to making them more feasible happen. But we start looking at things like the brand Under Armour, those stretchy pants, or yoga pants. Those are stretchy. Those are all threaded. Those are woven together to create something new. What goes into making those? We're not just harvesting from a plant anymore. Getting more creative with the materials that we're using and synthesizing to create the clothes that we wear. Cotton's not always stretchy. And all of us are very fortunate to be able to wear such things. All these different types of clothes, these different fabrics. Back in the day when cotton was still being, before the cotton gin was even created, all of the seeds getting separated before fancy cotton was crossbred. GMO, if I might, kind of like broccoli, crossbred to create the better types of cotton. Very limited on what you could grow, where you could grow, and certain lengths of strand to be able to create different qualities of cotton. Poorer classes of people were only limited to being able to wear hemp because of its coarse threads and ease to make at least some clothing. I don't remember if it was Japan or China, but your class forced you into only wearing cotton, or not cotton, hemp. Cotton was reserved specifically for the upper classes. And then through even freedom of speech, we're all fortunate here. Who knew that clothing could be a form of speech? I believe it was in France. And again, I know in one of the Eastern Asian countries, depictions of, I can't even really call them symbols. Because in one of those handful of places, things like flowers were prohibitive on your things that garments you wore or the furniture you had, anything made out of cloth, weren't allowed to have flowers. You'd get arrested for something crazy like that. All these little things that you never knew about textiles, all the little intricacies and again costs kind of all add up. And in a somewhat rough transition, listening to a podcast the other day that was talking about the intricate and small costs that all add up when we look into going into green energy or just our energy use, our supply and demand requirements that we look at today as opposed to yesterday. Simple enough comparison would be the oil. When it was first discovered, you could almost just scoop it out of the ground out with a bucket, pour it into your whatever, and bam, you have a useful product. And through the supply and demand of things, realizing that we enjoyed this black gold, we had to figure out how to start digging. Mining operations got more and more intricate, more and more involved, costing us more and more. And our ability to refine the product became even greater and greater, making it so we could spread our ability to use it thinner and thinner, more broad, until now where we are at now with fracking and how involved that gets to extract oil. But it's not just oil. We talk about batteries. Batteries are only getting their start, more or less. We have the general idea. We're figuring out how to incorporate more and more complex chemicals, compounds to make the batteries work a little bit better to what we want. But copper was a big thing within this discussion. How much copper we need to make the world go round. And there's different grades of copper. Just like the oil when we started off to the oil that we harvest now. There's different grades, different purities. And so when we take those different purities and we take them out, because when we harvest copper, it doesn't come out as copper pipe or copper wire straight from the mine. It comes out in chunks and little balls and granules fused together with rock. So we have to take that rock and we have to smash it up so we can get it to little bite-sized chunks. So that way when we heat the rock, or ore as it's called, so that way we can melt the copper out of there and then go through the process to refine and purify it, getting out anything extra. Maybe there's some iron mixed in or whatever else. You got to boil things off and throw in some borax to help separate the two. So if you find a really good, healthy copper mine, that process to break it all down, rather simple, rather quick and easy. It's out the door with minimal cost. But that copper, used again in wires, in our computers, in our cell phones, all of our electronics to make things happen. Need more and more of it. So we start digging deeper and deeper, going into different qualities of copper. And so what is the final cost breakdown? How does it all equal out? Do we have the supply to back up demand? Reduce, reuse, recycle can go so far. Maybe it brings us a little bit further. But again, these are ideas, these are concepts, these are talking points, these are things that make us sit back and again, maybe we're able to expand that conversation just a little bit further. So that way we can bring the grand conversation to something that we can all start to figure out. But I've been Billy Bones, B-I-L-L-Y-B-O-N, the number 3-S. You find me on Twitter and Gab, at Billy Bones. Find me on Mastodon, the No Agenda Socials, at BillyBones at NoAgendaSocial.com. And there's a website full of lots of things, billybones.com. Remember, that's spelled with the number 3 instead of an E. Go there for an email, show notes. Got a couple here, book and podcast recommendations. And there's past shows, There's even links to the SoundCloud and guest spots that I've done in the past. And this is a Value for Value podcast. If you found value in this episode or this podcast, be it the single episode or the entire catalog, fantastic. Glad you did. The first thing that I ask that you do is you give the show a share. Maybe someone else comes up with that talking point, that idea, gets them walking down the road. But if you found this podcast was worth monetary value, fantastic. Again, you go to billybones.com, you scroll all the way down, you click the Value for Value button. It'll take you to PayPal. You can chip in, you can donate, you can support the show, whatever number you feel is appropriate. But if you feel this show is worth some Satoshis, some digital currencies, little tiny bits of Bitcoin, fantastic. You can be like Quirk S did, and she sent in a message with off the Doppelgangers episode saying she has yet to meet my doppelganger. She says, I have yet to meet my doppelganger and sincerely hope that I never do for both our sakes. Yet, love when the woo comes through. This shorty flew by too fast. Great subject and ponderings. And to everybody else, thanks for listening. I love you guys, and I'll talk to you next week.